We'd like to move on to the next part of the proceedings, which is now just to ask that following your discussions and given the five questions, we'd like each sort of part of the room, if I mentally divide it into to four pieces, if there's anybody who would like to raise a particularly interesting, insightful or controversial point that they've or conclusion they've come to about the these questions as a result of their discussion. All right, the tailor in the far corner, you've been shopped as being particularly interested in electric vehicles. So would you like to give us some comment?
The Jeremy Clarkson one. We're not thinking that he's going to buy an electric car because he likes cars with a lot of oomph in them, like noise. And at the moment, electric cars, you know, are very quiet. But if... yeah, like I was thinking you put like a soundboard in them, you know, to make them... like your sound effects, and which might persuade him more to get an electric car.
Okay, thank you very much. All right, anybody else at that far end on Jeremy Clarkson or one of the other questions?
This school children had a good idea.
Yeah.
Said that if you could capture the CO2 from a car and store it or use it in some way, you'd make yourself many, many billions of pounds, because oil, petrol, is an incredible form of energy. It's got so much energy for its volume and weight. So if you, at each car you come up with a CO2 condenser in the exhaust pipe, you'd make stacks and stacks of money. Is that right? Bright lot, that class. Yeah.
So have you invented one then, Evan, yet?
No.
You've had 10 minutes.
So you've got big ideas.
Very good. Good idea. Okay. Right. The table's immediately just in front of me and to my left here. These groupings... what about, what would you be prepared to pay for a litre of fuel, anybody? I know the limit I had on mine. Yes, lady there in the blue.
We had an extensive discussion about this issue of how much you would be prepared to pay, and unfortunately we complicated the matter rather, because we thought about what else is available. So what is the price of substitute things that you could use relative to the car, and also we thought about what proportion of your overall income goes onto these things. The actual price level in itself, probably out of habit, people would continue paying for whatever is the price, but probably a large number would become more aware of the actual cost. If a large proportion of their income would be taken up by transport. Or
we didn't really answer the question, but I'm old enough to remember, although because I'm that old, I might be remembering wrongly, that petrol prices went up 50% overnight in the 70s, and not much changed. It just continued.
I don't want to pay something that's in three figures for my tank of petrol in my small car. That's my sticking point.
Yeah. We looked at the work hour equivalent of a litre of fuel at £6, or minimum wage, I think, is around about the £6 mark. And we worked out it should be about £600 for that litre of fuel.
Right. I'm sorry, £600 what? I'm sorry, for a litre of fuel?
What a litre of fuel does in terms of equivalent work.
Yes.
And then compare that to the minimum wage, times that by the number of hours. So
Okay.
In overall terms, that's the sort of price that... I did also relate the story of how much I would pay to travel 2 miles on a bike in the wet on an autumnal evening, as opposed to jumping in the car.
So did you come on your bike tonight?
I did.
You could have found out then.
Yes. Okay, good. Right, so any advance on £600 for a litre of fuel? Yes.
The conversation we had on the table here with two representatives from Africa is quite different, because their problem is not only how much does a litre of fuel cost or litre of the kilowatt hour of electricity cost, is can they get it? And I think this question we probably haven't debated here today is we have all technology, or we planning to have all technology to generate cheap and abundant energy, but how do we get it to people? And I think their issue is more, is it reliable? Is it coming every day, anytime? Is it coming every time I flick the switch on? And We probably don't have this problem here in Europe, but it's probably something that has an impact on the energy industry, or maybe that definitely National Grid is concerned with, is how do we get it to people? And we were debating that, doing my free speech of publicity, maybe being the energy manager for the university in Europe, we have obviously a different concern. And I think we are making very realistic, very financially viable actions to reduce our costs, reduce our the university cost and spending. And we believe universities, since the last year's saving we've made, can probably put a few hundred thousand pounds back in education just by saving on energy. And we've done that through using local contractors, looking local works, and creating activity. So I think there is maybe a little bit more than generating energy. There's also how do we handle the energy, how do we create the skills and the industry around to get the energy everywhere, which maybe was Phil's point about how does the last mile work. And in Africa, it may be more than a mile.
Thank you. So a different perspective on the whole question there. Right, so did you want to come back on that?
I can certainly come back. I mean, in Africa, you live next to the biggest powerhouse on Earth. You know, the Sahara can fuel the world, no problem. It's just a question of that infrastructure. And that Morocco now has got a lot of energy from solar power because they've got big solar power installations now and feeding many, many, many hundreds of thousands of people. So that sort of thing needs to be done now in Africa. That needs to be rolled out. But I'm talking somewhat longer term. But I think in all of this, you have to see the long-term solution, because we can't just go on using gas unless we do something very clever with it.
I mean, it's an interesting point in a way, but the solar stuff is going to have to go hand in hand with storage, is obviously one point that you're well aware of. But I think one of the other interesting things to think about in this context is where we're sitting in an economy where we have, you know, really quite cheap access to abundant energy on demand that's highly reliable. You know, we don't have the rational human being thinking around what it takes to get us that energy. If you don't have any access to energy and you have to plan it from scratch, from source to delivery, you're more likely to be aware of the rational trade-offs you have to make to get that energy. And, you know, just to be giving a grotesque example for a minute, but putting a large-scale solar park that would be minute in the Sahara, if you put it across, say, the whole of East Anglia, then you could guarantee that people would be complaining, mm-hmm. and that we wouldn't want it, even if it was the most rational and economic solution.
Well, that's the point about doing it in the desert regions. No one is living there, or very, very few people. And most people would go for it. We'd have to pay you to use it, for sure, but that's absolutely what has to be done.
I think what is really interesting, you know, my point about, you know, the most of the growth in energy use is going to be in these other economies, and so do they follow the pattern of having what I'd nickname sort of big energy solutions, whether it's, you know, big power stations, big solar farms, or whatever? Or what is the opportunity for developing countries to sort of leapfrog to an alternative model of energy, which is more distributed, it's more local, people have a greater sense of an awareness of where their energy is coming from and where it's being used? And to some degree, you know, goes over the problem that a lot of developed economies are in, which is the one just mentioned. We're too used to having easy, cheap, on-demand energy, and we haven't actually developed that sense of criticality about where it's coming from and where it's being used. So, you know, my sort of comment is, you know, don't always think of just these really big infrastructure solutions, particularly in developing economies. There are more distributed alternatives. Mm-hmm.
And
just to add to that, if it happened in a different market, which is the computing market, you know, 20 years ago, it was very much like the energy market is in this country now. We had big central computers, and everybody had to use them. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, it's completely distributed, and it's transformed that system of and our computing power. The same thing will happen with electricity. It becomes distributed across a wide range, and it will transform the way we use it, how we generate it, and how much it costs.
Same's happened with telephony. You know, so-called developing countries are more sophisticated in their use of mobile telephony for sort of commerce and so on than we are.
Okay, well, that seemed like a good point at which to leave this group discussion. As I say, of course, you're all very welcome to carry on after the formal end of this part of the evening and to finish off any food and drink that's remaining. It was going rapidly when I was down there before. So I just wanted to round up the evening from the chair here by thanking all our speakers for coming and presenting to us, and particularly to our external speakers for joining us tonight. And to point out that the presentations, podcasts, photos and more from this evening will all be made available on the Ideas Cafe website shortly. So if you haven't taken everything in that was said, don't worry, be able to go and download it and think about it again at your leisure. Pardon?
Relive the experience.
Yes, I shall be trying to delete the film, I suspect. Okay, and to say that there will be another Ideas Cafe before Christmas, which is going to take the global research priority theme of innovative manufacturing. So watch out for that. Check on Insight and the Ideas Cafe website. And most importantly, I think, to continue to discuss these ideas and keep in touch and, where appropriate, involve yourself in the university bodies that are interested in the topic, the GLP if you're in research, the student thing that we had the shameless plug for earlier in the evening, and other societies that are concerned with the energy policy and what we're going to do about this crisis, if you believe it's a crisis. I would say that I just ask you as well, there's the Energy Trail poster there, which you can have a look at on your way out. That's already been advertised. And with that, I'd like to thank you all for coming, for participating in the evening, making it a lively atmosphere. And I hope to see you again at a future event. So thank you all.